Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. And I know all of you listening are going to be celebrating the new year, just like I will, and, of course, millions of others around the world. I thought it would be a great way to close out the year today by having a guest that we're going to be speaking with in just a moment. Her name is Nicolia Christie. These are very turbulent times for many people in many parts of the world. How can we take a positioning of looking at what we're seeing, what's evolving, and take an attitude with the new year that's going to enable us to move forward, not backwards, not taking a negative positioning where we don't believe that we are empowered to do anything? Well, I think my guest, Nicolia Christie, and her book, Contemporary Spirituality for an Evolving World, is a wonderful helpmate for that. And we're going to be sharing some of those thoughts with you today. Nicolia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. Thank you very much. And I appreciate you inviting me on a very special New Year's Eve. Thank you very much.
It's really a delight having you. Now, you're in France, is that correct?
At the moment, I'm actually in London, but I live, my base is in France, but I come backwards and forwards between London and France.
Now, you are the founder of the New Consciousness Academy and the co-founder of World Shift International. You are obviously a writer, and you feel like one of the gifts that you bring to people is an awareness that they don't have to stay stuck, that what is demonstrating itself at any point of experience, we can take a positioning of creating shift and making change, both on a personal level as well as on an environment global level. What was it, Nicolia, that for you as a woman, as an individual, made you aware that this was the direction that you wanted to follow?
Yeah, thank you for your question. Well, I guess it sort of arose out of the fact that I'd spent many, many years training and working in personal development and the psychological arena, the personal transformation of the individual, which of course was my own journey, which culminated in March 2002 in an experience where I died, and I had, in the truest sense of the term, a shamanic death, which took me 7 years to recover from. So from 2002 to 2009, there was a huge amount of the culmination of many, many years of deep, deep process work I'd been doing on myself, which really exploded in March 2002. And enabled for a massive transformation to happen within me. And as that transformation took place, of course, the transformation was occurring within my own consciousness as well. And when I emerged from that, when I began to emerge from that in March 2009, literally 7 years to the day, that's when the title of my first book just literally dropped into my awareness out of nowhere. And that's when I knew I had to write a book. And when I knew I had to write this book, and it really was a sort of guided, inspirational knowing, I knew that book was going to be about personal and global transformation, because what I came to understand is that, and I looked at, over that 7 years that I was recovering, I was looking at the question, why is nothing changing? You know, with all the, you know, the revolutions that have happened in history, all of the resistance that's happened in history, all the politics, all of the wars, all of the events that have happened through history to try and bring about world peace, sustainability, restorative justice, and all these sort of values. How is it that we are still not even breaking the back of that? You know, there's pockets of that reality emerging and certainly growing in sort of a global society, but they're just little pockets. So I started to look at, is it because we're approaching global transformation, if you like, from an external perspective, we're putting the, if you like, the success of this onto those outside of ourselves, like, you know, politicians and, in quotes, global leaders and, you know, those people in positions of power and driving. And I came to really realize that actually for the kind of peace that we want to live in, and especially when I was writing Clarion Call, and I was very, very tapped into what the ancient, indigenous, wise cultures had been saying, especially the Hopi and the Maya, who had been talking about a new golden age and 1,000 years of peace. And I thought to myself, well, for us to actually really embody that, for that to become a reality, it has to be happening within the mass for this to happen. And so that's when I started to really get this perspective of inner, what I called at the time, inner shift, world shift, mm-hmm. inner peace, world peace. And so my focus really is absolutely on both of these transformational expressions.
You have so many points of information that enable you to share some of this journey you've just discussed with those that would read your book, Contemporary Spirituality for an Evolving World. And you talk about many different aspects. And there is a chapter in your book called The Seven Dark, Seven Light, and Seven Rainbow Areas. And you said you came across a First Nations peoples model called exactly what I just mentioned, Seven Dark, Seven Light, and Seven Rainbow Arrows. But you said you felt it was very synchronistic that you were coming into contact with materials from people that were around ages ago, and you felt very, very drawn to the points. And the seven dark arrows are attachment, dependency, judgment, comparison, expectation, and then the wounded inner child, also self-importance. Now, I think anyone listening to this show would relate to those being seven dark arrows. And then you have the seven light. It's self-awareness, and you go into depth with each one of these: self-acceptance, self-appreciation, self-pleasure, self-love, self-actualization, and impeccability. I really liked at the beginning of that chapter a quote that you put in by Lao Tzu. And this is what he said centuries ago. He said, if you want to awaken all of humanity, then awaken all of yourself. If you want to eliminate the suffering in the world, then eliminate all that is dark and negative in yourself. Truly, the greatest gift you have to give is that of your own self-transformation. Those words are very powerful today, and this is a very powerful chapter in your book. Because that's the reality. I think so many times people have looked at, well, I'm going to go on a march, or I'm going to do something here, and I'm going to change the outside world, without realizing they really have to start with themselves. This was a very big transformational thing for you. Did you war with these arrows at all?
Did I war with them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What I can say is that I lived them, and I'm still living them, you know, because there's layers and layers and layers, you know, of attachment, dependency, judgment, comparison, expectation, wounded child, self-importance. We just go into the deeper, 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 deeper layers, clearing, clearing, clearing. And as the First Nations people said, is that every time, for every dark arrow you break, you pick up a light arrow. And so what I say in the book is they're a map for evolving consciousness. They were a map and are a map for my own evolving consciousness. And I think everything is in those arrows, from the dark, the light, to the rainbow, the inspiration, the healing, the transformation. It's all there. And we can look at these arrows individually, and we can look at them in a group context, in terms of nations, in terms of, you know, societies, in terms of communities, in terms of self. These are a map for evolving consciousness, and they were so instrumental in my own journey of healing and awakening and integration that I decided that I wanted to actually write what I believe is the first ever in-depth account of these arrows, because all the research I ever did on them, all I could find was the actual title of each arrow, but I couldn't find any writing about the arrow itself. And so that's what I did. I decided to write. I was going to write a book, but in fact I put everything I wanted to say into Contemporary Spirituality for an Evolving World, into a chapter.
Well, I've mentioned the seven dark arrows, and you have repeated them also, and then the seven light arrows. The seven rainbow arrows I found very intriguing, and I felt this is so important. And in the section where you talk about the seven rainbow arrows, you also talk about the qualities of the positive and negative self of the masculine and also of the feminine. Now, usually when people hear that, they'll say, well, it's male-female. That's true. But it's not just male-female. We all have the masculine and feminine within ourselves. I remember when I first heard that, I think I was 20 years old, and I went, huh, what are you talking about? Because people didn't think that way. But it's well known. We have these traits. And you itemize these out. This must have taken quite a bit of research for you to really be able to be so detailed about this. And it's not good or bad. It's just these qualities we need to be aware of and honor and respect them. One of the first rainbow arrows is illumination. And this is something that you have experienced yourself to a great degree. This must really have brought you a sense of, yes, I'm really finding out more about myself, when you experienced that illumination from your own death experience as well as everything that followed.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And the, you know, the instrumental point in that particular experience was the experience I had in the early hours of October the 15th. I think it was 2009, all the years jumble into one. But I had this an experience where I left my body, and I experienced what it feels like to have no mind and no emotions and to just literally be. And as light and fluffy as it sounds, it was absolutely real. Just be love. And the freedom to not have the mind, to not have the emotions, and to just be free to be absolutely in love, it really inspired me, because I left my body. I've had a lot of out-of-body experiences. My journey is, in terms of what I've experienced, is so layered from in-body to out-of-body experiences. But I've had a lot of out-of-body experiences in my adult life, and actually as a child as well. And this one in particular, the October the 15th one, it showed me when I came back into my body. And of course, you know, you never forget an experience like that. It shaped my consciousness, really, because it showed me this is what is possible. We don't have to leave the body to be able to have that experience. I couldn't have had that experience unless it was possible to have that experience in the body. I was being shown it for a reason. And so it gave me something to aspire to that I'd actually sensed and felt for myself. An amazing, amazing experience.
This is so important, and anyone I've ever spoken with, when they are evolving, when they are in this process, there's a sense of joy that goes along with it, but also a sense of frustration. Because I think many times people feel as they are evolving that life sometimes should get easier. And many times it doesn't, because you are more consciously present with what's going on, and you realize you have to pay attention. And this is something that you discuss in your book. One of the rainbow arrows, this is the third one, is trust and innocence. And boy, I can relate to that. And the aspect of trust, look at what's going on in the world today. It is a huge issue. We are having a violent vomiting of discord that is causing us to say, I don't trust, whether it's political stuff that's going on, all kinds of distortion that we finally are awakening to because it's coming to the forefront. And there's so much fear that often is promoted by this. However, it is meant to be liberating. It is meant to make people aware they do have choices. They can make change. Was the issue of trust a big one for you before you had a lot of your issues that you now realize were gifts?
I would say yes. I mean, I feel that personally, yes, definitely. And I would say that for pretty much all of us, trust is a big issue, fear and trust, because of the culture we're raised in, because of the conditioning that we're raised into. So, you know, it's like deconditioning. We need to decondition. But one of the things I've spoken about, I've just written my 2014 message, which is the evolutionary propulsion of 2014, which is actually on my site at the moment. And one of the things I talk about in that article is what's actually happening on an astrological, astronomical, cosmic level, because we are still in the grand alignment. You know, this huge 2012 experience that we had, a big part of that was the grand alignment, you know, and the completion of this 26,000 year cycle. Now, the grand alignment, we went into almost exact in 1980, and it completes in 2016. So we still have two more years of being in this extremely potent, unprecedented period in human history. Coupled with that, we have a hugely powerful astronomical influence at the moment, an astrological influence, which with Uranus and Pluto, which are square, and there's seven exact squares. And what that's about, it really is about the breaking down of all the old systems within society. And this goes on until 2015, but actually we got Neptune that's gone into Pisces as well. And that's all about the dissolution of the myth of religion, what religion has, the caricature that religion has become. And it's about dissolving the shadow of the age of Pisces. So I write about this in depth, actually, in this article that I've written. But this whole process goes on till 2026. So we are still in a very important period of time, which started really in 1997 when the asteroid Chiron was discovered, and it was that very year that alternative therapies burst onto the scene. So we've been in this window of time, I think it's nearly 50 years it will be by the time we get to 2026, of an unprecedented evolutionary trajectory for humankind. So yes, we can look at trust and we can look at fear and we can say, okay, these are all under the spotlight for humanity, individual and collective. And they are being absolutely facilitated and supported by these events that are going on in the heavens at the moment. Neptune in Pisces is serving us, learning and understanding the power of love. Whereas what's happening with Uranus and Pluto, it's about overcoming the love of power. It's about breaking down the love of power and rising with the Neptune energy in the power of love. And I guess this is, in a way, what we're learning. And there's a lot of people, as we know, it's viral. This sort of spiritual movement is viral, especially on the internet. And we hear it again and again and again and again. It's love, love, love. And so many people will think, yes, it's love, but it's very, you know, it's very sort of light and fluffy, but it's truth. You know, the way through is the way of love. And we have to find our way back to be able to live that from the heart. And that's where we come to trust and innocence, because trust and innocence have been not just in our own lives, but we carry the ancestral memory of those that have gone before us, the generations that have gone before, who have been betrayed. And we all have our own experiences of betrayal, but we have to, in a way, and the times we're in are facilitating this shift in consciousness. This is the shift that we are still in, to enable us to make that evolutionary leap. And that takes courage.
Yes, it does. It takes courage. It takes mindfulness. It takes the willingness to be able to ask questions. It takes a willingness to maybe shift into experiences where our outcome is unknown. We need to know that that is something that's healthy. I had an interview with a gentleman yesterday who did a 500-mile pilgrimage, and he said it was an aspect of trust for him to do this because you just didn't know who you were going to be meeting. You didn't know where your next meal was coming from, and it was a huge experience for him that took him out of his executive environment and put him into a different state of mind. And he literally went through his own kind of transformation with his experience. You put two words together in your book, conscious communication, that I feel is very compatible with everything that we have discussed. You say, we have, as human beings, a phenomenal gift, and that is words. And we can heal ourselves, others, and the world with words, but they can be very destructive. I think everyone listening to the show today, including myself, as the host, we've had experience with where words have harmed us and have really wounded us because of the feeling that went behind the word. It's a combination of the emotion, the intent of someone, and many times a viciousness that will come across, and they can be very hurtful. At the same time, the opposite can occur. And I think what people are starting to understand on many levels is that you can actually be the transformer of something that maybe was directed at you in a very negative way and can literally evaporate that negativity into something that is going to be powerfully a plus for you. But you do have to have that mental and emotional acuity to be present so that you do not buy in to someone else's fears, if you will. And I like what you talked about earlier. You mentioned how our environments and the people we're around and the things we're taught, all of this has a big effect on us. So for us to be true to ourselves, to be able to be the change, as Gandhi once said, be the change you want to see in the world, we need to recognize that that self-discovery is not going to be without its challenges, because it means maybe we peel away something, just what you mentioned, that has to do with our ancestors, things that have been carried forward that may or may not be applicable. It's really a challenge to evolve into your own self and to live in a world that may say, I think you're nuts, and realize you're not. And then one day the world comes to you and says, I want to know what you know. I want what you've got. How is it that you are at peace with yourself? This happened with my mentor that I knew so many years ago. She reached that point. At first she was called crazy. Then people said, I want what you have. And she weathered so many things. And this is really a gift that we give. Let's talk about that the four intentions. Talk about the four intentions for a couple of minutes here.
Four intentions. Can you just say something about what you'd like me to say about them, Donna?
Well, when intentions are a model, when we want to really become more aware of who we are, the first intention is speaking from the heart. The second one is listening from the heart. The other one is to communicate respectfully and wait until the other person is finished speaking. The other is to speak leanly. Mm-hmm. And I thought those were interesting points.
Yeah. I mean, the conscious communication is so, so, so important, because how we interact with each other every single day, it sets up, if you like, it sets up the dynamics that we're going to be experiencing. So every conversation we have, every communication we have, it impacts the self. Now, if the self is in a very developed, integrated, centered, solid place, it can absorb what is happening, and it can dissolve it, neutralize it, and send back out love. But most people are not in that space. So what happens is they go into reaction. And I talk a lot in the book about the difference between reaction and response. Now, conscious communication is all about response and responding, moving out of reaction. So this is a very important It's instrumental, and in fact I pray that it could be taught in all the schools, that we could drop one of the subjects and just teach conscious communication. We'd already be setting up a different kind of framework and energy as young people move into adulthood. But yes, it's absolutely essential.
When you are going through this process of conscious communication, and as you express yourself through your book, you talk about how we need to also realize that we're part of the world. We're not going to be able, as isolationists, if that's what we choose to do, be able to avoid interacting with other people. And I've known individuals that have tried to do that, and their lives really have been quite miserable because they felt so very, very alone. But you have some wonderful, wonderful tips like the talking stick, which I think is a wonderful tool to enable good communication between people. But you also go into an understanding that as people, we're having to become more aware that a mess has been created and there are messes that need to be cleaned up. But we can't dwell too much on the past. We have to learn from the past, but it's where we are right now. We start right where we are. We don't have to go out and spend $500 million on something. We just start right where we are, in the moment, with our thoughts, with our feelings, and recognize that who we are as an individual is very, very special. It's very, very, very much a part of the whole picture. And we can do that. We don't have to be famous. We don't have to be glamorous. We don't have to be anything but just ourselves and being true to ourselves. And as we're looking at this brand new year that's right in front of us, I think many of the points in your book, Contemporary Spirituality for an Evolving World, is significant because you can't start anywhere but right where you are.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's what you did.
Exactly. And I think, you know, it's key for people to understand that they just need to keep everything simple. Everything just needs to be very, very simple. We don't need to be, you know, biting off more than we can chew. We don't need to be thinking, oh, but I need to be this, or I need to be that far down the road, or I need to take on this or change that. We can just do it step by step. Keep everything simple. I think this is such an important fact to remember. Keep it simple. As I say, keep it zen.
I think that is so important.
And I think, you know, also part of the conscious communication is also this concept of forgiveness. I talk about forgiveness and I say that for me, the new forgiveness is understanding, because the term forgiveness has so many connotations associated with it, where it's kind of been used as a power over and a disempowering. The word itself is a beautiful word, but what's been projected onto it, what it's become, has not necessarily got the most positive connotations associated with it. So I say that forgiveness is about understanding. If somebody has done something or said something that has hurt us, rather than going into, well, you know, I ought to forgive, a case of understanding what may have motivated that person's behavior, where might that be coming from, what has happened in their history. And when someone can say, well, maybe that's about compassion then. But the interesting thing is, I'm doing a lot of meditation on the term compassion at the moment, because I understand in Latin that compassion means to suffer with. And I'm really questioning that now, because it's do we want to continue suffering with? And if we're not suffering with someone else, in quotes, in compassion, close quotes, then what do we do? And it comes back down to loving. So for me, I'd like to replace the word compassion with loving, the word forgiveness with understanding. And these, again, are very basic terminologies. They're so simple, but actually they're so easy to understand. There's nothing overly mental about trying to understand what is, you know, when we think about compassion and forgiveness, we can understand it, but we're getting our heads around it. But when we think about something like understanding and loving, it just seems more direct. It seems if we're looking at the neural pathways in the brain, it's a much more direct communication from brain through the neural pathway, through the pathways that then go to the heart, and the heart gets it immediately. It's the brain and the heart that understands these kind of terminologies.
Nicola?
So again, with conscious communication, I would say for sure, we do need to be looking at loving and understanding.
Nicola Christie has been my guest. Her book is Contemporary Spirituality for an Evolving World. It is a very good read. It's a wonderful item to have in your library, and it's a wonderful way to start out the new year. You can go to her website, Nicola Christie, and that's Nicolya Christie, Christi, and you'll find out more. Nicola, thank you so much for being my guest today. This is
thank
Donna
you.
Sebo. We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Have you ever had a paranormal experience, such as seeing a ghost, having precognitive dreams, out-of-body experiences, or other happenings? If so, Donna would like to hear from you. She's putting together a book of 100 stories from people who would like to tell their story. If you'd like to submit yours, send an email to donna@delphiinternational.com. Again, send your story to donna@delphiinternational.com. Be sure to include your contact information as well. Thank you.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hello, and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo. We have our second guest today, J.A. Jantz, and she has put out a dynamic novel, Second Watch, and she is in the Pacific Northwest. Hello, J.A.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm doing wonderfully. You have been very successful in writing a number of novels. You are a person that really has a way with words. How did you discover that you wanted to express, through the power of story, the observations that you've made in life? What made you become so intrigued with speaking out through novel?
Well, I wanted to be a writer from very early on, and writing is my life, and so my life is reflected in my writing. It's sort of without, you can't have one without the other. It's sort of like the horse and carriage.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is a story behind Second Watch, and it's really about a very special person, Leonard Douglas Davis. He was born in 1943, and he passed away in 1966. I love how you described yourself. You say you were a scrawny, awkward girl, you wore glasses, and you had a lot of brains. And I just chuckled when I read that. And you got to know him. How did this man strike such a significant chord inside of yourself that you wanted to put the story around him? You wanted to use him as a base here.
My problem, I always looked up to Doug Davis. He was a year ahead of me in school. And if you ask some of my classmates, they all felt the same way. He was sort of the star. He was literally the big man on campus. And we looked up to him because he was smart, because he was likable, because he was kind. And when he went away to West Point and then subsequently died in Vietnam, it was a tragedy for everyone. My problem with Doug's death was that I learned about it too late to attend his funeral. And so I always felt guilty about not having honored what he did for his country and for us. And so that guilt for not having properly honored him at the time is what caused this story to come into existence.
Second Watch. This developed into a mystery, which you're very, very well known for. And when you were pulling this together, it obviously had a life of its own. When did you start pulling together the story about Doug? And as it evolved, did it seem to take on a life of its own?
It did take on a life of its own. There, of course, there's an underlying mystery in the book because I write murder mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of putting Doug into the book as a character with my fictional character, J.P. Beaumont, came to me sitting in my writing chair in my family room in early August, a year and a half ago. I had become friends with Bonnie Abney, who was engaged to marry Doug at the time of his death. And so I called her and said, what would you think about this? And she gave me the go-ahead. As I worked through this book, there were times when I could no longer separate the fact from fiction. In the book, J.P. Beaumont lives because Doug Davis saved his life.
Mm-hmm.
In my heart, Doug Davis really did save Bo's life. And,
mm-hmm.
and that probably sounds pretty schizophrenic, but that's how it felt. I became so immersed in the book that it was hard to tell fact from fiction.
Well, I think any good writer feels that way. I think of many people that have written stories, as you have, that really have been brought into play because of real-life experiences and associations. That's what gives the essence, not just of intention, of communication, but also it brings to life some things that often people want to ignore. I know of a gentleman who, as a novelist, he had never thought of writing novels. He was very much one of these people that dealt with facts. He was very linear in his thinking. But at the same time, his creative self was blossoming. And a very famous writer at a synchronistic event where they happened to have to meet at a luncheon because someone said, I want you to meet so-and-so, who is a very famous writer. And that person said, take your knowledge that you have and put it into a novel format so that the truth can really be seen. And it just opened up a whole new world for this writer. And I know when I came across their material, I said, oh my goodness, look at all of this information that's here that is easy to really relate to and to digest because it is in story form. And that is part of the magic of your writing. So I can understand why you said there came to that point where separating fact from fiction was very difficult. In fact, you have a sentence in your book where you say, scenes from 40 or even 50 years ago danced back through my head in full technicolor splendor and almost 3D detail. I think many times writers actually experience that. They will, and that's what you just said, there is that part of you that just has to put it down the way that it's coming through. Your mystery is very intriguing because you are relating to veterans, and as you said, it is a murder mystery. With your book, what was the most difficult section, J.A., when you were putting things together? Were there times that you had a very deep emotional response to what you were writing, or you had to just leave it alone?
Of course. I shed tears while I was writing that book, just as my readers have shed tears while they were reading it. But the hardest part for me of this book was walking away from it when I finished.
Oh, my.
This book had such a big part of my heart woven into it that when it was done, I couldn't get it out of my head. I couldn't go on to the next project. And that's when I wrote that piece that's at the end of the book, The
mm-hmm.
Story Behind Second Watch, because I needed to come to terms with all of the things that had happened, that having Doug saved Bo's life by lending him that copy of the book. I thought, boy, this is such a wonderful scene. Now I understand why Bo is so conflicted when he revisits his memories of Doug Davis. And then within days, I met the young man in Lincoln City whose legs were saved because he had a copy of one of my books on his knees when an IED came into his vehicle in Iraq. And that experience, when he told me what had happened in real life at a book signing, it made the hair stand up on the back of my neck because I had invented Bo's life being saved by the book Doug gave him being inside his shirt. But to have that fictional scene reflected in such close reality just took me by surprise.
You have a paragraph in your book, Lieutenant Davis was awarded a Silver Star and a Purple Heart for his bravery, bravery that cost him his life fighting a war the politicians were busy deciding not to win. He didn't receive an award for saving a life, but he should have because he did, and that's relating to a particular character in the book. And I found, as you said, there was so much feeling in this book because you had such a relationship, an association, not just in memory but in spirit, with the realities of a time period that very few of the population in America really understood. There was a lot of anger about it. They didn't understand what was going on. And I think, for all intents and purposes, a lot of politicians didn't either. It was like playing a chess game, and they really didn't understand how every move they made was affecting the lives of hundreds of thousands of people in a very dramatic way. J.P. Beaumont is one of your characters. He is a detective. He is a very profound person. And I was very impressed, too, with how effectively, and I know that you've got quite a background in association with police work and investigation work, and this comes across so well in the book. It really is. You're just a master at using words, but you also have mastered an understanding of a lot of the historical aspects that many people maybe don't even have an awareness of. And the story is so gripping. The ending of it is amazing, and you have so much here that is a human story, but it also shows in your book, in your story, The Second Watch, how you never assume that the work is ever done, the due diligence and vigilance in preserving the rights and freedom of a people, of a nation. You always have to continue to pay attention to that. J.A. Jantz, what is your website where people can go and find out more about your wonderful, wonderful writing?
Well, it's www.jajantz.com.
And Jantz is spelled J like Jane, A-N-C-E. And you can go there and find out more about her work. Jay, before we say goodbye, is there a message that you would like to share or a thought you would like to share with my audience?
Well, when I wrote this book, I wanted to honor the vets from that time. And the responses I've received from veterans have been amazing. But the most recent thing that happened is someone up here in the Pacific Northwest read that book and was inspired by my depiction of the memorial for Vietnam veterans in Bisbee, Arizona, that she is in the process of starting a similar memorial in her town.
Wow. Well, you've touched the lives of millions, J.A. Jantz, and I can understand why. The novel Second Watch is a powerful one. And it gives a lot of information that is very current with today's world and a lot of the things that are going on, but it gives an insight into the world of a person that touched your life in a very special way. And you have, I would like to say, memorialized him along with a lot of other men and women in a time frame that too often is not remembered, except for those that were actually a part of it. J.A. Jantz is my guest. Second Watch is her novel, and it is one that once you get started reading it, you're going to have a hard time putting it down. J.A., thank you for being my guest today.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have a product or service that you would like people to know about? Internet radio is a powerful medium that can assist you in reaching people who like to shop online and pass by electronic word of mouth information about you, your products, and or services. The Donna Sebo Show reaches around the world, and you can be part of that enterprising network. For more information, contact Vision Broadcasting via Donna at DelphiInternational.com
or call 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello, and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo, and as I mentioned yesterday, today is my last show with BBS Radio, and I want to thank the staff and everyone that has had a wonderful influence on my programming for the last 6 years. I am moving to another network. That network is pwrtalk.com. You can check that out. My newsletter is going to be going out. But I want to express something to you as we are closing out an old year and going into a new one. Both of my guests today had a very special gift to share. As all of the writers that have been on my show for these many years, actually I'm going into my 13th year of broadcasting, and I've interviewed well over 3,000 people. The gifts that these people that I have interviewed through these many years have been absolutely amazing. And I know that I've been able to share so many of their stories and those very special things that they wanted you to be aware of. It's so important for you as an individual, as you're closing out this year, regardless of what your circumstances have been and whatever you have gone through, good, bad, or indifferent, you need to realize how important you are in this experience of life. Every one of us bring gifts of talents into this world. And part of our responsibility in this journey of life experience that we travel is to uncover those gifts and to realize that we're going to be able to polish those gifts so that they shine so brightly that whoever we come in contact with, by whatever method of application we utilize them, we're going to be able to make a difference. And as you go into the new year, and I know you're going to be having wonderful celebrations this evening, perhaps you may choose not to do that. It doesn't make any difference. I want you to celebrate yourself. I want you to celebrate your individuality, your uniqueness, and the fact that you have the grace of life that enables you to be a part of something bigger than yourself. And know that every point of investment that you make in yourself is going to make your life a better one, and you're going to be able to actually be more generous with other people in everything that you do. So many times we think generosity entails giving money. Well, that's true. It does. And money is a very important part of life. But many times sharing our talents, giving the best of who we are at any moment may impact someone else in such a way that it'll inspire them to do the best for themselves. Boosting the good in life takes effort. Just thinking about something is not necessarily going to bring things about. So maybe one of the gifts that you would like to give yourself is a few hours, get some poster board, do a vision, a visual board. Get out old magazines. I'm going to be doing it myself tomorrow. Get out old magazines that maybe you've accumulated, newspaper articles, whatever, and start cutting out what you'd really like to see manifested, what it is that you really want to see changed in your life. And I know doing resolutions, my goodness, most people aren't going to keep but maybe one resolution that they might put down, if that. Why? Because we have so much interference. But when you do a vision board, it is something that you can look at and you can think about. It stimulates an awareness that you can take action. You know, thought is wonderful. Positive thinking is wonderful. But you can sit and think until the cows come home and nothing is going to evolve necessarily. Action really makes a difference. And let me give you a case in point. There's a young lady that I did some counseling with. She, in fact, was a teenager. She was very, very angry with her mother. Her mother was on welfare, and her mother was not a stupid person. Her daughter came home one day to find that things were in disarray, and there was no money. They didn't have money for groceries. And this is a very intelligent girl. She was an A student in college, not in college, but in high school. And she said to her mother, "Why is it we have to live like this? What is it that keeps you from doing something?" Now, this is a very mature young lady. She was, like I said, an A student. She was working part-time, doing things for people where she was generating a little bit of income. She challenged her mother this one day. And her mother's thought and statement was, as she was sitting in a rocking chair, rocking away, this is how she'd find her mother every day, just rocking away. She said, "Mom, why is it you're not doing anything?" And her mother said to her, as she rocked, "My dear, God is going to take care of everything. You have to have positive thoughts." Well, the teenage girl lost it. She said, "Mother, you can think and think and think, but nothing's happening. You've been doing this for years. You must do something to bring things about." Well, when she was sitting in front of me and she was expressing so much anger, she was frustrated. She loved her mother dearly. Her mother was not a bad person. But she had gotten stuck in her thinking, so much so that she didn't know how to get unstuck. Well, I said to the girl, we had quite a conversation. I said, "You're a very fortunate young woman because your mother is giving you a gift. She's giving you the gift that you are recognizing that it's not just thinking that makes things so. It's the action that must go along with the thinking. Intention is wonderful, but without action, it's never going to go anywhere. If you want to eat food that's put in front of you, you're going to either use your hands, or you might stick your face in the plate and, you know, eat it that way, or you're going to use a knife and a fork or a spoon, but you are going to have to put the food in your mouth. Unless you are in a situation where that's not humanly possible, or someone else, you have given your life over to someone else where they will dictate as to what you have and what you do and how you will be able to put that food into yourself." This is something that she got very clearly. And I said, "Your anger is not unjustified, but you need to realize you are aware of something that your mother, for some reason, cannot see. So continue to be the example for her. Go out and do. Continue your education. Reach out. Work. Interact with people. Find out how you can get scholarships so you can go on to college. And demonstrate to your mother what can be done." That's the challenge I give to you. I know that I'll no longer be with you here on bbsradio.com, but I want to wish you the very, very best. Check out my website, DelphiInternational.com, for all the changes that are evolving. I wish you the finest and best in this new year. I know that you're moving forward in your life in a very special way. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless, and I wish you nothing but the finest and best in this new year, and I know that gift can be yours. Again, God bless, Happy travels. A joyous new year to you. Bye. Goodbye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.